Today we speak with a veteran from the documentary American Exile. Veterans being deported for stupid shit, and we can do something about it and aren't. Next on Making Democracy Work.
You're listening to Studio 809. This is what community sounds like.
In the Pikes Peak region, there's no shortage of activities. Whether you're experiencing breathtaking parks or magnificent works of art, if you're getting fashionable at a film festival, or fresh at a farmer's market, if you want to hear the sweet sounds of a symphony or the smooth shred of a Stratocaster, look no further than Peak Radar, your one-stop shop for all events in the Pikes Peak region, your free source for viewing and posting events. So no matter how you engage with our beautiful region, visit peakradar.com and get plugged into the peak.
Welcome to Making Democracy Work. I'm your host, Shelley Roars, spokesperson for the League of Women Voters of the Pikes Peak region. What is the League, you ask? We are a nonpartisan grassroots organization, and our local League of Women Voters, also known as LWVPPR, has been active since 1937. The League works to improve our systems of government and impact public policies through education and advocacy. League positions fall under three areas: good government, voter education and outreach, and citizens education. Today's topic falls under good government and citizens education because I'm pretty sure most of our listeners don't know this even happens to veterans who fight for our country. Imagine this. You are 21 years old and enlist in the U.S. Army to fight in the Vietnam War. You do everything you were taught. You're loyal and dedicated, you fight and defend the U.S. on foreign soil, and you're willing to give your life for your country. 50 years later, you don't get the military benefits you deserve and are deported back to a country that you didn't serve, fight, and kill for. Our guest today is Manuel Valenzuela, a Marine veteran and one of the featured veterans in the documentary American Exile. Welcome, Manuel.
Thank you for having me.
Your first name is Jesus, so okay if I call you that?
Oh, yeah. Jesus is a good name.
Yes, sir. Tell me a little bit about story and when you were in the Marines at boot camp about Jesus.
Oh, in 1971, I joined the Marine Corps. And, you know, in the morning, you lined up the whole platoon, and they start calling everybody's name, like Jesse and so-and-so. Yes, I'm here, sir. I'm here, sir. And he goes, the drone strike goes, Jesus? Who is Jesus? And I raised my hand, and he goes, come here. And I ran up there and lined up, and he goes, what's your other name? He goes, Manuel. Well, Manuel, all these cuss words, give me 50 push-ups, you know. And every morning he said, I'm not ever going to call you Jesus because I'll be cussing at you every second. So freaking Manuel, you're this and that. Give me 100 push-ups, and every morning, he goes and calls me. He says, is Jesus here? And I raise my hand. I rush over there. Okay, Manuel, all his cuss words every morning, practically, when he showed up. So
every time. Thank you, Mom and Dad, for the name. Thank you, Mom and Dad, for the name.
Yeah, I know. So. But you know what? I'm blessed for having that name. You know, it saves me a lot of things, a lot of life, PTSD, a lot of things that I've gone through. I pray to him. So. Oh. It's a blessing.
Sir, being a veteran myself, the story that we're about to discuss is very disturbing and shameful. Not to give anything away, but you and your brother Valente both volunteered and fought in the Vietnam War for our country, and 50 years later are among thousands of veterans being deported. In the 1980s and early 1990s, our country saw the largest immigration in the nation's history. 22 million people, both with and without documentation, came into the U.S., most from Mexico and Latin America. In 1996, President Clinton responded by signing the Illegal Immigration and Immigrant Responsibility Act. This new law had unexpected consequences for veterans. With some 50,000 foreign nationals serving in the armed forces at any given time, and with over 500,000 foreign-born veterans living in the United States, the law made many of them vulnerable to deportation. This new law took away judicial discretion and kept judges from taking into consideration factors like service to our country, family, medals of honor, disability due to military service, and longevity in our country. The law also made minor offenses like shoplifting, driving with an expired license, or possession of marijuana, all deportable violations. First off, thank you and your brother for your dedication and loyalty to our country. To give our listeners some background on you, you received an honorable discharge from the U.S. Marines. So why did you volunteer to fight for our country?
Well, my brother went first in 1968. He joined the Army in Vietnam, and he was in Vietnam in 68. And when he came back, I saw in his face a curiosity, I just looked at his face, and I didn't know that was PTSD. I was young, I was 20 years old. I was 19. And when I looked at him, I said, man, there's something there. I need to know. But and that's Vietnam War was going that time. So I said, and then at that time, too, we were asked to join to stop the communists to infiltrate the country. So instead of being drafted, I said, I'm going to join the Marine Corps and go find out what is all that secret that my brother's face looked at. I didn't know it was PTSD. And he came back, and his face, you can see a mystery there. And I went into the Marine Corps, and I said, that's the best way to go in Vietnam because you're trained to kill. So that was my MOS, 0311 grunt. And when I first went to Okinawa, and then Philippines, a 30-day training, guerrilla warfare training, and then went to Vietnam, did rescue missions. But coming back to my brother, he was in 1968, Tet Offense. He was in the thick of everything. The Tet Offense was crucial. That's the one that really changed the war. And it was, a lot of soldiers got killed. And my brother got the Bronze Star there in 1968 when he came back. So to me, that's why I joined the Marine Corps, because I wanted to go in a different, as a Marine. They say it's more tougher and more better. So I got my rude awakening. It's the same thing. It's hell. Combat is not another thing to speak about, to talk about. People ask you, what did you do? Well, it's my last mission. We did a rescue mission into Vietnam, and to get guys out of harm's way, which they were trapped in. So we got them out and brought them back. And that was my end of my tour in Nam. And then they sent me to, I was coming back to the United States, and I didn't know I had like 1 year left over. And I know I'm going home because I was in combat, and I said, I'm going home. No, I got back. No, you have one more year. What am I going to do? You're going to be an MP. Can you figure this out? From the jungle, I mean, dirty and filthy and in the jungle all this time. Then I have to put on dress blues, stand and guard a post, a nuclear submarine post where they made them that time. Over in California, and I was the guard there, guarding nuclear submarines. And then, not just that, there's another island they call it Skaggs Island, and that was a nuclear communication center, West Coast, for the nuclear submarines. I guarded those departments, so a base is so critical that for me, it's, like, I felt proud of doing that because I was guarding something that's important. I even got to see the nuclear submarines and all that. But through all these years, when I got out of the Marine Corps, I didn't know what PTSD was, because when we came back from Vietnam, we were called baby killers. And we're, a lot of stuff, bags full of feces was thrown at us, and plastic bags full of piss on them, and we were called baby killers. And it was ugly. But I didn't know what PTSD, so I just dealt with it. And even my family, my brothers, which I have to bring my other brothers in this. There were 8 boys and 4 girls. My older brother was in the army in Vietnam. I have another brother, which he don't want me to say the name, but I'm going to say it. Hey, it's about time they come out of the woodwork. They're scared of Homeland Security. Mario, 1 year older than me, in the Navy. I'm a Marine. I follow Mario. I have another 1 year younger brother was in the Air Force, Fernando.
Yay,
then I have another brother younger than me, Ricardo, was in the Army. Five brothers served this country. To the ones that went to combat, that my brother and I in Vietnam, to get our removal notice, to deport us from this country, is they messed with the wrong Marine.
Amen. Yes, sir. And I'm sorry, where is Valente now?
Well, he got discouraged. We've been through a lot. And all my family lives here in Colorado Springs. And I got a lot of grandkids. And so I'm a family man. I like to be around. So my brother was like, we call him the tumbleweed, because he never can stay in one spot all the time. So he found this lady and married her, and they live in Chihuahua, Mexico.
Well, I guess one of my questions is, you know, why? I'm glad he's at least with someone that cares for him, loves him, and he's in a place, in a good place. So that's awesome. But why fight to make this right and make it straight?
Well, when I got my removal notice, and this is kind of weird, in 2008, I live right here in Colorado Springs. My brother came and visited me, and I help him because I do construction, I do remodel and stuff. He came over and I give him work with me, and I told him, have you gained your benefits? He said, no. And I said, I'm not either. Let's go to the VA hospital here in Colorado Springs. In 2008, mind you, we went and filled paperwork to get benefits, to get help. And 2009, January 29th, I had to appear in court in Denver, immigration court, to deport me. I got a letter to appear about 10 days before that, and I went January 29th to court, and I didn't tell nobody. I felt ashamed, embarrassed, and don't know what to do. Who can I ask to help me? A Marine being deported after what I'd gone and done? And then even that same day, I went to court, and my mother passed away right here, Colorado Springs Memorial Hospital, that evening. So my world was like, wow. So I kept to myself. In the middle of February, my brother came to my house, and his face looked just like I felt inside. And when I saw him, I said, man, what's wrong with you? And he pulled up the same removal paper that I had, and I looked at it, and I put it on the table, and I said, I'll be right back, brother. I went to my bedroom, brought the same removal paper, and he looked at it. He goes, wow, you too? I said, yep. And it's in the movie, and it shows all this. And to me, I felt all alone when this was happening. I didn't want to tell nobody. I was embarrassed. And then when he had that, I said, you know what? At least I have a brother with me. But walking and my brother with a Bronze Star to get a removal notice from this country, that really made me go on fire. I said, this is my brother. This is my oldest brother. I always protected him and always protected my own family. And I said, this government is going to have to answer for this, because this has gone too far. You know, he was in Vietnam, and I saw, and I still see, that hell he went through, too, like I did. And for us to go that far, to see and to feel death and to taste it, is something that people can't understand. So after that, when I show them the paperwork, I said, man, we got to put our uniforms back on. Kind of didn't fit right with. But we put our uniform on, and we called the media. Channel 13 came out to right here in Colorado Springs. and did a news thing about it. That was 2009. About 3 or 4 days later, we had calls coming from out of this country, from Mexico, from Jamaica, from Canada, from all other countries saying, hey, man, I'm a Marine. I'm deported. What? I'm an Army guy. I'm deported. I said, what? Navy and all that, Air Force, to deport. I said, hell no. So my brother and I had a little blue van, and I said, let's go all over the country and fight this, go all the way to the border, because at that time we could cross because we had permanent residence ID. And we crossed over and met the deported veterans, and man, to see those guys,
sorry. Don't you be sorry one bit. You take your time. It's so frustrating. It pisses you off enough to be so emotional about it that it's what our country's done.
Betty, no. To see these guys that are deported without their family, it's like hell.
As you can hear from this story, this gut-wrenching story, I am hoping it will compel our listeners to not only come and see this documentary coming up, but hopefully to act and get a little bit more involved. According to immigrant scholars, before the 1996 law came into effect, there had never been a veteran deportation. Never. Today, exiled veterans probably number in the tens of thousands. But because no government agency tracks deported veterans, no one knows the true number. Not wanting to, I'm sorry, besides
Can
our guests.
Can I say something on this?
Yes, please.
Okay. This government says that they don't track veterans. You know, when we joined the Marine Corps, our fingerprints are put on them. And they know us completely. And they gave us shots and shots. When I went to the jungle, I got about 100 shots. Just walking the line. Boom, boom. Yeah. What do you mean they don't keep reports? They do. This is... to me, it's like, it gets me mad to hear that bull that this government says we don't keep track of who we deport. That's bullshit. Excuse me.
Don't excuse. Because I love it. It tells you exactly.
That's the worst thing that a government can say, because if it doesn't keep track of who deports, then we're in trouble. Because anybody can come in, terrorists can come here, and they don't keep track of nobody. This is the way our government is. Can't keep track of anything. A person that comes to this country, they know. That's a full lie.
Yes, sir. So not wanting to give anything away, because again, I want people to come to this event on August 24th that you've got coming up. Robin Baker, Customs and Immigration Enforcement Officer, stated they, Customs and Immigration, haven't done anything to stop the deportation, and they could. This is a shameful part of this story. Why aren't they doing anything?
You know, right now, I believe that a person that is put there in charge of over Homeland Security and all that, he's not even a military veteran. He don't give a damn about veterans. He don't give a damn about military. You put a person in charge of that, this is wrong. The one that should be a head of a Homeland Security, which is commander-in-chief of the military, and that's the commander-in-chief, the president of the United States, is commander-in-chief of the military. Now, he is commander-in-chief, and he's in charge of Homeland Security. Whatever he tells, they do. And this has been going on for a long time. That person that said that he could change this and that, he was told not to. By all these presidents that have been in this system for a long time. We want now, we don't want a politician to decide on us military veterans. We are separate from all the people in this United States. We're the ones that give this freedom that you have here, I have here, that everybody enjoys in this world, because we put our lives on the line. And any person that does that has the right to live in this United States, the land that he protected with his life if he had to. And to come into that, the most ugliest thing that I ever seen and done, I've been to five funerals. And the last one really got me too, because they all did. The person, those funerals about a deported veteran, the last one was deported for 20 years. He got killed in Mexico. They brought his body, and all of them, they brought their body to the border. They put him in a coffin, put an American flag on him. Then they bring him to the United States, and the last one was taken to Homs, New Mexico. And the mother, we met her before. We tried to get him back, and he got killed. So he came back, and she only had 8 sons. 7 sons carried his coffin. And they did a military funeral, folded the flag, and gave the flag to the mother, said, thank you for his service. You call this, really? Homeland Security don't keep track of who's here and who's gone. They do. And matter of fact, he got a flag. Oh, they knew.
Right. We need to figure out a way to make this right. We need to fix this. The reason I wanted you here today, you have a free private screening of your film, which I think for people, again, come see the film and get involved to figure out, you know, whether it's calling your legislators, your senators, whoever you need to call, write letters to fix this problem. You have a free private screening of your film, American Exile, coming up on August 24th at 7 p.m. at the Entz Center for the Arts, Shockley Zalabak Theater at UCCS, presented by the El Pomar Foundation. To get free tickets, you can go to the Entz Center for the Arts, and we will also include a link in our description, so it'd be easy for you to just click on that to get those free tickets. They're limited seating only, so I've already got mine, and I'll be there. But is there anything I had missed that you'd like to include today?
Yes, everybody has to call on that, or else they will not be able to go in. You got to be registered.
Make sure you register. Again, right. Click on that link in our description. You will get tickets until they're not available anymore. So right. You've got to go and do that.
And then I'm going to have my brother, which I'm going to have a call time and bring him back. I want him to be there with me and the movie producer at the end of the show. If people want to, we're going to go upstage and you can ask questions to all of us. You know.
Okay. And the website, we've also got that, AmericanExileFilm.com. So. Mm-hmm. Thank you for being here again, and I just really love being here with you today. It's been very special for me, so.
Thank you very much, she's still my sister's Air Force.
Yeah, I know.
Well, you know, that's why I keep saying to everybody, you know, we never leave nobody behind. Never.
Let's live up to that.
And that's our oath we keep within each other, too. You're in the jungle with me, I'll bring you back.
This part is also not leaving him behind, so I hope we live up to that mantra.
Yes. So, thank you very much.
Yes, sir. Thank you so much for being here today. And again, I'm so excited. We hope to see everyone at the American Exile film screening on August 24th at 7 p.m. at the Entz Center for the Arts, Shockley Zalabak Theater at UCCS. Again, click on that link in the description to get tickets. You will not be able to get in without them. Making Democracy Work is sponsored by yours truly, Shelley Roars, real estate agent. Discipline, hard work ethic, service to our nation. This is the type of realtor you want on your team. In closing, thank you for listening and being an active and engaged citizen of our community. If you would like to join our local league, please visit our website at lwvppr.org. Membership is open to anyone over the age of 16 and is free to students. Be a more active and engaged citizen and become a member of the League of Women Voters of the Pikes Peak region. Thank you for listening.